This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Cheyenne McNeil is a Koharie journalist in Brooklyn. McNeil spoke to Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding about Koharie land and water in North Carolina.
So can you take us back to your childhood and share some of your earliest memories of this place and what did it mean to you growing up?
It's a creek, but we call it the river. It was blocked off for most of my life after some hurricane debris and some like excessive damming from some beavers. I'd only ever heard stories, but I never actually went until last year.
And for our listeners who have never been there, how would you describe this creek and the land around it? Like, what does it look like? Or feel or sound like?
Yeah, it's the stretch of the river that I went on is the first kind of leg goes under like a highway overpass, and it can be kind of noisy right there. And then the minute you sort of pass that, it's really hushed, it's really quiet, and then it's into some of the more maybe like secluded parts of the town that it's in. It's a Blackwater River, so the leaves from some of the trees around like really steep it. Like we say steep it like tea because it does kind of look like sweet tea or like a black tea you might drink in the morning.
And were there any teachings or stories or just even family traditions connected to this place when you were young or just even now? And could you explain a little bit why the river is such an important place for your tribe?
So growing up, I kind of only ever knew about the river just from like seeing like the big highway marker sign on the road and driving over it. But a lot of elders in our community talk about going here, like learning to swim here, like my uncle's story, or churches. Like our communities are like very like Christian, and like churches would have baptisms here. And the 60s and before then, like when Jim Crow was so bad in the South, indigenous people in our community sort of were in this, there were black facilities and there were white facilities, but so they sort of, I guess I'm trying to explain that like a lot of elders talk about this being like a place to sort of be removed from like the racism and everything that was going on like during the Jim Crow era. And now I think what's really special is because the tribe has been able to restore access to our river, that we kind of can do some of these things again, like have cookouts and family meals, and churches could do baptisms if they wanted. So just sort of like now the tradition is that we get to do it all over again and sort of recreate what that tradition might be.
And that leads up to my next question. Can you talk about the work that your tribe has done to care for and restore the river?
Yeah, this is something that I think is really exciting. I think it was around 2015. It was mostly like a group of like young men and a few older men in the tribe just started going in on the weekends and cleaning it up. It was pretty inaccessible because of the hurricane debris. And so they went in with like chainsaws, a lot of like borrowed tools, and we're just sort of like cutting up trees and removing like big logs and big trees and whatever like that debris was, and sort of starting in when it was ankle deep and slowly getting to where it was deeper and deeper until like one section of the river was passable and then another section. And so at this point they did a lot of that just sort of independently, and then applied for a really small grant, and I can't remember how much it was for, but they were able to sort of start doing more. And then at this point, they've like received enough grant monies to, I think it's like upwards of like $2 million or around that to continue restoring the river.
You know, looking at the bigger picture, what are some of the environmental or climate challenges your tribe or tribes in the region are facing, and what gives you hope moving forward?
Something that I think is sort of special about our tribe's river restoration is that we're not a federally recognized tribe. So a lot of it was just like having to sort of fight for our voices to be heard. Our people weren't consulted about some of the things that were happening like in the county and in the area, and which sort of resulted in some of the issues and the like losing access to the river. But we live in a pretty big, or the tribe is located in a community that has a lot of hog farming. And so one of the biggest concerns when the river wasn't flowing anymore is that sort of like hog waste could get into the river and further damage the ecosystem. And so I think that's something that I think gives me hope, is that they've been able to go in and restore the river and sort of hopefully prevent and mitigate some of the issues that could have happened with some of the hog waste.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.